For some time now, there's been concern about foreign influence on the Trump campaign and now in the Trump administration. The focus has been on Russia, and we learned yesterday that the FBI is investigating possible connections between the Trump campaign and Russia. But there's another foreign power that might be trying to establish favorable connections with the new administration, although Donald Trump frequently attacked it on the campaign trail. China. Russ Choma is a reporter for the Washington Bureau of Mother Jones, and he joins us now to discuss his article, Businesswoman Who Bought Trump Penthouse is Connected to Chinese Intelligence Front Group. It's in the current issue of Mother Jones, and we will look at it and other ways that our president's finances might leave him vulnerable to outside influences. Welcome to our show, Russ.
Well, thank you for having me.
Your latest story from Mother Jones is about that sale of a Trump penthouse. Where's the penthouse?
So the penthouse is at 502 Park Avenue, which is the Trump Park Avenue building. It's 28th floor, which is a pretty nice view, I think. It's the purchaser bought the unit for $16 million in mid-February.
And did she buy it from the president? Did he own it outright?
He did own it outright. And this is sort of the thing that we're dealing with right now, is that he said that he's taken a step back from his businesses, which may be true, but he still owns the businesses and he still owns the property. So he was still the person making the deal, even if he wasn't directly involved in the signing of the paper.
Do we know if she paid the market rate?
We don't know if she paid the market rate because, interestingly, the unit was never publicly listed. We know she paid about $2 million more than a unit just one or two floors below that sold recently. But a penthouse unit that's actually a couple floors up, there are multiple penthouses, but a penthouse that's a couple floors up is actually on sale right now for $35 million. So it's sort of tough to gauge exactly what she paid, but it was never publicly listed, so we've got no idea how the whole process happened.
So how did you learn about this purchase?
So in New York City property records, it showed up as a sale. February 23rd, I think it happened. You know, when you buy a property, you've got to sign a couple different pieces of paper. If there's a mortgage, that usually shows up. There was no mortgage in this case, so we know it was a cash deal. And she bought the penthouse, and she signed a couple pieces of paperwork because it's a condo building. So that's how we ran across it.
And it's just a month ago. Can you tell us?
Right.
Can you tell us about the buyer, Angela Chen?
So the buyer, we'd love to know more about her. We've tried contacting her to talk to her, and we haven't been able to get in touch with her. She's a Chinese-American businesswoman. Her business is a company called Global Associates, and according to its website, it helps connect people who want to do business in China, and it specializes in helping business people connect with powerful people in China who can help them. There's a term, guangxi, which she uses on the website and says that she can help with it, which basically, you know, means that she can tap into the networks of important and powerful people in China. So the first story we did is that we found that, you know, this person who is in the business of selling influence in China bought a building in Trump Tower. And then when we looked into her a little bit more, we found out that she's also involved with a charity, a nonprofit called the China Arts Foundation. You know, she shows up regularly in the society pages, and she holds a lot of very fancy, you know, parties with a lot of very fancy people come to it. And she raises a lot of money for classical music events in New York City and in China. But when we looked at the foundation's website, we realized that it was actually very, very closely connected to a sort of a parent organization in China, which was also called the China Arts Foundation, which was founded by the daughter of Deng Xiaoping, who was the leader of China after Mao. And her name is Deng Rong. And she's a very, very powerful person, an important person in China. She's what's considered a princeling. And another group was actually used interchangeably on the website, on Angela Chen's website, which was a group called the Committee or Chinese Association for International Friendly Contacts, which when we looked into that, it turns out it's a group that's tied to Chinese military intelligence. So very, very quickly, with just a little bit of checking out of her website, we found that she's Angela Chen herself. You know, we don't know what her role is in any of these groups over in China, but she holds a lot of events with a lot of very powerful Chinese people who are involved with, among other things, Chinese military intelligence.
Has her company, Global Alliance Associated, bought property from the Trump organization before or only last month?
In this case, it was... was her as an individual who bought the property. It was not her company, which is interesting. And she already lived in the building on the lower floor. And when we looked up the property records for that unit, which the New York Post, I think, confirmed that they said that she lived in it and owned it. But when you look at the property records for that unit, it's a trust, and it pays its taxes through a trust management company in Monaco. So we really don't know a lot about her. We don't know how she moved in the building initially. We don't know how she found out that there was this new unit for sale. We don't know how the deal was negotiated. We don't know where it was negotiated. We don't know if President Trump is aware of it. I mean, a sale for a piece of real estate that fancy with that big of a price tag doesn't usually happen quickly. I mean, usually there's a lot of negotiation. So did it start before he was inaugurated? Was he involved with the negotiation? We don't know anything.
But this all could be very innocent, although there is always something suspicious when someone pays cash for a penthouse this expensive.
Right. It could be very innocent. And I think that that's one of the things. We actually have an article out today about the transparency of the Trump Organization on these issues. You know, when Trump, before he became president, he said that he was going to hire an ethics advisor who would vet every deal that he did once he became president and make sure that everything was on the up and up. And so we reached out to his people on this, and we tried to ask them, you know, because, right, if it's a totally innocent deal, it shouldn't be a big problem, and you should be able to look at it and say, well, we check things out. There's no problem. There is a fairly limited world of people who can afford to buy real estate like this. And, you know, she just happens to be in that. She's just a woman who would like a nicer view. But we haven't been able to get any response from them. We haven't been able to get any response about, did they vet this deal? How did they vet it? What was it that helped them reach the conclusion that this would be an okay deal? And I think it's a deal that, you know, if he was still just a private citizen, it would not necessarily raise a lot of eyebrows. But because he is the president, you know, it raises a lot of questions. There's a lot of things going on with China recently. There's going to be a summit. You know, he recently switched his position on Taiwan. So naturally, people have questions. Why did all this happen? And does the fact that he recently earned almost $16 million from a buyer who has links to both the top levels of Chinese government, does that have anything to do with it? If it does, you know, we should have some answers. And I think the big thing is that if he had divested his property, which is almost universally what ethics advisors or ethics experts say he should have done before he took office, this would not be a question. Nobody would be questioning this deal. But he does still own it, so it raises questions.
Didn't the president's private lawyer, Sherry Dillon, promise that there would be built-in protections regarding conflicts of interest? What are those built-in protections?
When she said that, that was pretty much the last we heard of it. And, you know, we reached out to them repeatedly and tried to get them to talk to us on the record, and they simply didn't want to be talked, you know, be quoted on any of this. So we don't know what their process is. In our most recent article, which is on the site this morning, we talked to people who specialize in vetting of, you know, deals, private deals, foreign deals, and they said, you know, it's a pretty standard practice. If you do any type of deal with people from Russia, from China, from any of the other countries that he's done deals with, you have a vetting process, and it's pretty thorough. And once you've done it, you've documented very thoroughly, and you're usually ready to talk about it to show that there's nothing wrong, because there are a lot of questions. And they all said, you know, one of the things that throws up a huge red flag is, does a person have connections to leaders of a foreign government? Doesn't mean that they're automatically problematic, but it's just something that would require a lot of looking into. And we have no idea if any of that was done.
You mentioned these two organizations, China Arts Foundation and the China Association for International Friendly Contacts. Do they have connections with each other? Didn't one of those organizations take down its website after you published one of your stories?
Right. So what happened is, on the China Arts Foundation website, we found a video which was set up to explain what exactly the China Arts Foundation is. And in it showed all these leaders of the organization, which also happen to be very powerful people in China. And then it showed events that they'd organized. And some of the events they organized were events that, when you go and you look them up, were clearly organized actually by this China Association for International Friendly Contact, which is basically a military intelligence organization. You know, it was all sort of out there. And the day before we published our article, as we were making inquiries, the China Arts Foundation website suddenly disappeared. So or was taken down. So it's no longer up, but luckily, you know, there's the Wayback Machine Archives website, so people can still find it. In the video, we were able to get a copy of it. It was available for download. So we have that in our article so people can go see it.
And we have a link to your articles on our show page at wmyc.org/lopate.
Thank you. Basically, you know, this information was all sort of out in the open, and what was done about it, we're not sure.
Now, haven't both the Republican National Committee and the U.S. State Department expressed concerns about the China Arts Foundation in the past? Have things changed recently?
Well, that's a good question. You know, it was actually the Friendly Contacts Committee that the questions were raised about. You know, they organize a lot of events, international events, and one of the events that they organize brings together retired U.S. military officials with retired and some active Chinese military officials, sort of flag officers, admirals, and generals, and they get them together and sort of have a dialogue. And in 2012, when this happened during the Obama administration, a group of Republicans became very concerned about it. There were some congressional hearings at which the fact that KFIC, the Friendly Contacts Committee, was part of military intelligence apparatus in China, was discussed. The RNC at one of their summer meetings introduced a resolution condemning this set of dialogues and saying that, you know, the U.S. shouldn't be participating in it. And in 2012, Bill Clinton was invited to give a speech to KFIC that was also co-sponsored by the China Arts Foundation. And we know from the Hillary emails that were released that the State Department threw up some red flags and said, hang on, we don't know if it's appropriate. Typically, we don't approve, events where Chinese government officials are involved. Eventually, Bill Clinton did give a talk at some event that was in the sort of greater constellation of these groups. But there was all this evidence that there was concern that these were not groups that someone so close to the presidency should necessarily be being involved with.
So what about red flags now? Have any Democrats signaled that they're interested in investigating this? Couldn't it be argued that the sale violates the Emoluments Clause?
So, there are several ongoing, you know, there are a number of Democrats in the House and the Senate who have taken up the Emoluments Clause. There is a lawsuit that was filed by a couple of the sort of leading ethics people. One of them, Norm Eisen, is actually quoted in an article. And he raises the point in the article that, you know, unless we know more about this deal, it's potentially concerning. You know, we don't know. It could be very innocent. It could be something more. I don't think that anyone is faulting the buyer or anyone else in these foreign deals. But it's, you know, as Norm Eisen says in the article, you know, we shouldn't be asking these questions about the president. I mean, we shouldn't be having these discussions. And because he still owns this property, it allows these questions to come up. I hope that we'll hear more about this. And I think the big thing is that, you know, there's a lot of real estate that Donald Trump owns. He owns multiple other units in this building, regular condo units and these penthouse units, like the one I referenced that's on the market for $35 million. Each one of these units represents another situation like this, where there's going to be a buyer. And like I said, there's a small world of people who can afford real estate like this. And there's going to be questions about them. You know, without any sense of how the Trump Organization is handling it, as long as they insist on owning this stuff and continuing to own stuff and continuing to do business, these questions are going to keep coming back over and over and over again.
How does the China Arts Foundation operate in the United States today?
We're not entirely sure. I mean, again, we haven't been able to get in touch with Angela Chen. We tried the phone numbers that were on the China Arts Foundation website, and we were told that it was the wrong number, and we haven't gotten any response to emails. But it is a 99, or it is a 501c3. It's based in Delaware. We found incorporation records for it. We found 990s for it. It appears to be, actively involved with bringing, you know, Chinese conductors to the U.S. and the New York Symphony and holding special events that honor, you know, China-U.S. Cultural connections, particularly around classical music. There have been a number of galas and fundraisers where some very, very prominent Americans and business leaders and people who typically are involved with, U.S.-China cultural exchanges have been there. You know, we spoke to quite a few people who said, I know Angela, sure, I've been to, you know, events at her house. She's very nice. But there's this sort of air of mystery about, you know, why and how she purchased this particular unit. For someone whose business is setting up powerful people in China, having such a prominent piece of real estate is you know, very good for her reputation, very good for her business. And, you know, I think that that's another thing that you sort of, now that Trump is president, you know, when he was in just a private businessman, you know, he liked having his name associated with sort of prestige and public recognition. And now as he's president, you know, people, buyers and people he does business with are still looking for that connection. But as president, who's in the Oval Office and is sort of supposed to be upholding the dignity and the unquestionable, you know, honesty and integrity of the U.S. presidency, he's got to be, I think, a little more careful about this stuff. And we don't have any answers about how that what steps are being taken to make sure that happens.
I'm speaking to Russ Choma, a reporter in the Washington Bureau of Mother Jones, about a series of articles he has been writing. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Russ Choma, who is a reporter in the Washington Bureau of Mother Jones. A number of articles he's written recently, especially the one that we started talking about, headlined "Businesswoman Who Bought Trump Penthouse is Connected to Chinese Intelligence Front Group," is what inspired us to invite him to talk with us on the show. Is this story connected in any way with Jared Kushner's deal to receive $400 million from Chinese investors for one of his properties?
That's a really, really good question. There's no obvious connection at the outset. The company that Kushner did the deal with is Anbang Insurance, and there are a lot of questions about them that have been raised in a lot of the reporting on that. Some of the very prominent people in this are actually the grandchildren of Deng Xiaoping. Now, this deal for the condo, Angela Chen's seems to be closely associated with a daughter of Deng Xiaoping. So, you know, there is sort of like a nexus, but we haven't seen any immediate connections. But, you know, again, I think, you know, there's a world of people who can get involved with these real estate deals, and a lot of them happen to be Chinese. There are a lot of very wealthy people in China right now, a lot of businesses that are looking to get involved with deals. So on one level, it's not surprising. And maybe completely normal, but again, that's when these questions about vetting come up. And how was the conclusion reached that this would not, lead to any ethical issues? And for that, we don't have answers.
Especially at this time when the United States is concerned about having China help it with its problems with North Korea.
Right. I mean, we've got that going on. You know, there's going to be a summit coming up at Mar-a-Lago. And like I said, you know, there's a lot of speculation about how Donald Trump so quickly pivoted his position on Taiwan to fit more closely with what China wants. There's a lot of, I think, perfectly reasonable questions given, you know, what's going on in the world right now, and there aren't a lot of answers.
On another front, you have previously reported that the president might have a secret creditor in connection to a company called Chicago Unit Acquisition LLC. Can you talk about that?
Sure. None of this is simple stuff, but basically what we found was,
we have a lot of accountants listening.
Right, right. Well, maybe some of them can call and help, because we're just reporters struggling with the concepts. But, you know, Trump had to list his debts. You know, when he ran for president, he listed his assets, his income, and his liabilities. And he lists, you know, he owes quite a bit of money to quite a few banks. Deutsche Bank, the German bank, is his biggest creditor. In total, we counted about $713 million that he owes. But there was one loan that was sort of mysterious, and it was to a company called Chicago Unit Acquisition LLC. And based on the rules of the form, the only thing that Trump had to write was that he owes the company $50 million or more. So potentially quite a bit of money at a very high interest rate.
What do we know about that company? Doesn't he own it?
He does own it. And so he personally owns it, and we've never gotten a good explanation as to what is going on here. He told the New York Times a couple of years ago that he had bought a loan that, you know, he owed some money to somebody, and he bought the loan, and he was just keeping it and had made a decision not to pay it off. He was just going to keep it, which raises some other questions. The reason that we speculated that there might be a mystery creditor is that, you know, and this is where things get a little complicated, is he says on his form that he owns the company, but he doesn't put a value to the company. And if the company is owed $50 million or more, it should be worth $50 million or more, and it's not. So at least one ethics expert that we spoke to said maybe it's not worth anything because that LLC in turn has a debt to somebody else. Again, there might be a very simple answer to all this, but we've asked and we haven't been able to get any sort of answer. And so it just sort of leads to speculation. And the speculation, I think, is not I think the speculation is necessary and not unreasonable, given that he is the president. And it's important to the public to believe that their president is making decisions based on what's best for the country, not on any sort of personal obligations or personal, you know, enrichment.
And couldn't this hidden creditor come from anywhere?
Yep, it could be anyone. I mean, like I said, it could be himself. He could, for some reason, be holding on to it. It could be someone else. He's not required to say what debt his companies hold, just what debt he's involved with. And so it's not necessarily improper that he didn't explain it further, but, you know, it doesn't help with the transparency.
Now, there is no need for speculation on another matter like the Trump Hotel in Pennsylvania, in Washington, D.C. Aren't some people arguing that the president is violating his lease on this property?
Yep, that's something that that I and my reporting partner, Andy Kroll, have written about as well. There's a lot of issues there. You know, the building itself, it's a beautiful building. It was the old post office in D.C. at one point. It's owned by the federal government. For years, it sort of languished and was not in great shape or very well used. It lost money. And so the government decided to put it out to bid to be a luxury hotel. A couple different, you know, major hotel groups, and Donald Trump bid on it. He won the bid, and he got a 60-year lease on it, and spent he borrowed $160 million from Deutsche Bank to fund a renovation of it. It's beautiful now, but, you know, he signed the lease with the government. He doesn't own the building, and the lease has a clause that says that no elected official may benefit from this. And so it seems fairly obvious to a number of ethics experts and people that we've spoken to who know a lot about government contracting that this is a problem because he is an elected official. And there's been a little bit of, you know, pushback from a few people saying, well, but he wasn't an elected official when he signed the deal. I don't know if that makes a difference. But the GSA has, which is the Government Services Administration, the agency that is sort of the government's landlord and which is in charge of this building for the government, and now is under the Trump administration, has not said a word. It's sort of been radio silence. So, again, there's questions and no sort of answers.
Can he be forced out of his lease?
Well, you know, I think the lawyers we've spoken to said, well, yeah, you know, you can force anyone out of anything if you pay enough money. You know, and he does have a long-term deal. But, you know, the question, I guess, would be how willing would he be to go? Would he fight it? Would some sort of deal be possible to negotiate it? But, I mean, this raises the conflict of interest, is that he's the boss of the GSA. He's also the person the GSA is leasing to. So, you know, a decision about whether to throw out someone as prominent and as important as him might actually go to the head of the GSA, or they might look up the ladder. He's at the top of the ladder. So at the very least, it makes a very, very awkward question for the people who run the GSA. And so, you know, it seems like something should happen. And, you know, if for some reason this does not violate the lease, you'd think that there would be some sort of statement and some sort of argument about that. But there pretty much has been just silence on it. So we don't know what's happening.
Isn't Deutsche Bank trying to get new terms for its loans? Why would they want the president to remove his name from a loan?
Yeah, that was reported in December, I think, by Bloomberg, that, you know, a number of these loans that he has, he's personally guaranteed.
So they're personal loans rather than business debts?
No, it's a business loan, but you know, the loan is to his business, but then he has, as a person, has guaranteed some portion of it. And so if the business fails, it's not just the business that's on the hook, it's him personally that's on the hook. And, you know, Trump Tower and 40 Wall Street, his buildings in New York, another lender called Ladder Capital has lent him the money for that. I think for 40 Wall Street, he's personally guaranteed, I think, $19 million. So if the deal goes bad, he, as a person, is attached to that, which, again, you know, he said that he was stepping back from his business, his daily operations of the business, which may be true. But at the end of the day, if the bank comes looking for their money, they're going to come for him because it's him personally who's guaranteed the money. And we haven't, you know, what we've seen isn't public, but the personal guarantee on the Washington Hotel, I don't think is public, but it was reported that this was among the deals that Deutsche was actually trying to get out of. And I think from Deutsche's perspective, it's an awkward situation.
Isn't this muddied? Isn't this muddy by the fact that Deutsche Bank is in a regulatory dispute with the Justice Department?
Deutsche Bank is in a number of regulatory disputes, which is not terribly uncommon for a big bank. They just settled one of the biggest ones, which was about their role in the 2008 mortgage crisis. And, you know, but this fall before the election, there was actually it sort of almost became a crisis for the bank because the Department of Justice said that they were expecting, I think, around $12 or $15 billion from the bank to settle the charges against them, and the bank internally was thinking it would be more like $3 or $4 billion, and so their credit or their shareholders got nervous, and their, you know, like the stock price dropped, and Angela Merkel had to make a statement about, you know, what the government, the German government, would do for Deutsche Bank or wouldn't do, and you know, I think that that was a great example that depending on how tough the Department of Justice was in their negotiations on the mortgage crisis would you know, affect the viability of the bank, and it would affect, you know, Germany, and the German government was watching this sort of thing. And if Deutsche Bank is the biggest lender to Donald Trump, that's just a huge conflict of interest. And if he's personally guaranteed to the loans, nothing short of divestment or ending the loans or ending his personal association with the loans is going to get rid of that conflict.
Doesn't he also have a loan from the Bank of China? This thing gets more and more complicated.
It does. It does. There's no end to how complicated it is. And I'm confident that there's going to be more things that we haven't seen yet. The bank, the loan, that loan is through a partnership. He has a 33% share in a partnership on a building in New York that has borrowed money from a number of banks and a number of financial institutions, including a bank in China and including Goldman Sachs. He also leases space in Trump Tower to the Industrial and Commercial Bank of China, which is one of the largest banks in the world. And so there's a lot of different levels, a lot of different connections with a lot of different places. And again, the only sort of response was, well, he's not involved in the daily operation, but we're not going to really tell you much more about how we're going to protect from him from conflicts.
Would all these mysteries be cleared up if he released his tax returns?
Not all of them, but I think a lot of them would. And I think that it would go a long way to helping understand how his business works and who he's borrowed money from. You know, I mean, his finances or his personal business is so complicated that not everything is going to be in those returns. But I think that quite a bit of information would. And it would also help us lead it to sort of other things that we could identify, even if not everything is in the tax returns. It would be, you know, steps towards more understanding. So I think that they're pretty important.
Now, there are some people who are suing the president over the emoluments clause, but it looks like he's not all that vulnerable. We have just seconds, well, but can you clear that up?
Right. I mean, this is, it's all sort of untested waters. I mean, we've never really had a situation like this, so we don't exactly know how these things will go down. But I mean, again, you know, the fact that we're asking these questions is a problem, and we probably shouldn't be asking these questions, but I guess we'll find out, and that's not a great situation to be in.
Russ Choma is a reporter in the Washington Bureau of Mother Jones. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.